Petru from the Toronto West Ecclesia in Canada, who's going to talk to us this afternoon. His first address now is entitled An Introduction to New Testament Greek. Brother Steve.
I'd like to thank Brother Ron for those kind words. Good afternoon, everyone, brothers, sisters, young people, interested friends. I would like to thank you very much for inviting my wife Jane and I here to be with you this weekend and bring with me the loving greetings of your brothers and sisters a little further north in Toronto from the Toronto West Ecclesia. They say hello. We truly are honored to be here and fellowship together with you, and we're really excited about the classes. It's been a long time getting to them, and we're grateful and happy that it's here. And I thank you very much for hopefully wanting to learn a little bit of Greek, because it's something that's dear to me, and I don't by any means want to push it on anyone, but it is an interesting study. I have made my best to make it basic. It's not going to get that involved. And if it gets too complex, let me know, but I really don't think it will. Okay? My apologies. Thanks. I'll let you know a little bit of my background. Brother Ron mentioned a little bit about it. I'm not going to go on too much because I want to get into this. I was born in Canada, but my parents are Greek and first-generation immigrant parents. And my first language actually I learned was Greek. When I was a little guy, I spoke Greek first before I learned any English. Thankfully, I have my older brother to thank for teaching me English because my parents didn't speak any. He had to go to kindergarten without a word of English. He only spoke Greek, so it was good that I wasn't the first. I can read and write Greek. I went to Greek school up to grade 6, so I can read it and write it, and I speak it fluently. In fact, due to the nature of the work I do, I speak Greek probably about 50% of my day. Now, in spite of all that, I want to tell you that I am by no means a Greek scholar. I do have an advantage for understanding New Testament Greek, as you'll see from the classes, but I'm not an expert. I don't know it all, so just wanted to make that clear. As we probably all know, and our brother mentioned in his opening few words, that the New Testament, as we know it today, was in its various forms of translation, be it King James, RSV, NIV, and from any other language that it's translated to, the original comes to us in Greek. So the original manuscripts were written in Greek in the first century AD. And so all the translations take from those Greek manuscripts. Now, unfortunately for me, especially for me, the Greek language that it was written in is not the same as the modern day Greek. There are a lot of similarities, and you'll see. I'll show those to you. But there are differences as well. And this is why I personally sought out, with a lot of pushing from a few brethren at our meeting, to try to learn more about the New Testament Greek language. And I'm still learning. As I mentioned, I'm not a scholar or authority on the subject. However, if we learn a little bit about the language, as our brother mentioned in his opening, it'll be enriching. And I think you'll find that out as we progress. Now, when I first started to prepare for the weekend's classes, I thought it would be best if we go through the basics of the Greek language, and this will be our first class. So we won't really be getting into too much into the Bible study, but I think this will really help the next two classes, as you'll see. So I thought I'd begin this class by giving you a little brief history of the Greek language, to trace its origins through time and see how it developed and changed in the expanse of time. Our main focus of the class will be the Greek alphabet and its pronunciation, as I believe this is the backbone of a language, and it is well within the scope of our class. And after this lesson, we should all here be able to pronounce Greek words properly. and not have to worry about getting on the podium and saying Greek words incorrectly. And hopefully you'll be doing that with confidence, and that's okay. I some people, even in my meeting, they tend to shy away from trying to say them. I have no problems at all. I appreciate the effort. However, if they're said cleanly and clearly, it's so much nicer. And you'll see. And then we'll look at a few vocabulary words. Actually, I'll let you look at those vocabulary words. You have a handout. I'll talk about that a little bit later. So we'll begin by looking at the history and the development of the Greek language. The Greek language is a direct descendant of an Indo-European language spoken by civilizations in the northeastern Mediterranean, having a long and rich history spanning a period of no fewer than 34 centuries, from 14th century BC all the way to present day. Now, depending on the source one uses, one will get differences in regards to the certain periods. I kind of put them all together, and I came up with five periods. The first period being what we call the formative period, and that's the beginnings from its prehistoric origin to the race of Homer, which was approximately 900 BC. The second period is the classical Greek period, and that started from Homer, 900 BC, to around the Alexandrian conquest, around 330 BC. Of course, we probably all know of Alexander the Great. Now, the third period is the period we're interested in, and it's pronounced Kini Greek. I think most people haven't heard it pronounced that way. Many of you may have heard it pronounced Koine. I'm going to tell you that it's not Koine, it's Kini, and you'll see why in a few minutes. And that's the correct way to pronounce it. And you can see the disparity between the two. And Kini Greek was a period from 330 BC to 330 AD, the period of the common or universal Greek. It was the universal Greek language, and you'll see it at that time. We then moved to a period called Byzantine Greek. Byzantio was the Greek's name for the city of Constantinople. And this period was from 330 AD to 1453 AD. This was the period of the Greek Orthodox Church. And then the fifth period takes us to modern-day Greek, which was from 1453 to the present. We'll just quickly look at the first two periods, one and two. Now, one source groups these two together, calling them ancient Greek. The original form of the language is Mycenaean Greek, and that started at 14th century BC, running to the 12th century BC, and it was characterized by the use of syllabic script called Linear B. Now, tablets of this Linear B language have been found on the mainland and have been dated to approximately 1200 BC. Now, I'm going to skip a bit and go to 8th century BC. I'm going to leave the period between those out for a bit. And that next period was called Archaic or Classical Greek, as you have up here, from the 8th to the 4th century BC, where the Phoenician alphabet was adopted with the introduction of new letters and vowels, and that would be the direct descendant of what we've got now. The earliest writings with the Greek alphabet come from the last half of the 8th century, as I had in the slide, and these include, around the 8th century BC, they include writings from Homer, the Iliad and the Odyssey. I'm sure many have heard of those. Now, there was a break, as I mentioned. There's a 400-period break. And that break was in the evolution of the language from 12th to 8th century. And it corresponds with the destruction of the Mycenaean civilization. There were some invasions by the Dorians. And in those four centuries, there was very little linguistic process that went through. Now, different dialects were to develop in different areas. The Attic dialect was spoken around Athens. And that's where Athens is situated. That's the center of Greece, the capital. And so the Attic dialect was spoken around Athens, and much of the great Greek literature comes from us, from this dialect. And the Attic dialect is taken from the area, which is called Attica. That was the area surrounding Athens. It was from this Attic Greek that Kini Greek was to develop. And so this is the period of greater importance to us, the greatest importance, Kini Greek. It's also known as New Testament Greek, Bible Greek, Hellenistic Greek. It was the most widely spoken language of the times, of course, due to Alexander the Great. He conquered that entire area, and in his entire zone of conquering, it was the language that was used. So it absorbed all the Mediterranean districts, and regular and common people everywhere spoke it, including Rome, Alexandria, Jerusalem. And so this is why it was called Kini, because if we look at what it means in the Greek, Kini means common. And it's an appropriate word to use to describe the language, because it was a common language used by all the common people. Now, the word Kini is the feminine form of the Greek word kinos. Kinos is the masculine form. In Greek, it's like the French, where there's male, there's masculine and feminine and neutral words. And so, kini is the feminine form of the Greek word kinos. And that word kinos is used several times in the New Testament, not coincidentally. So, I thought we would begin by looking at a few. So, we are going to open the Bible just a bit. So, Acts 2 and 44, if you will. And we'll look at our first passage. Now, as you turn it up, you'll notice up on the slide, I have the Greek word written in the Greek language and written in blue, so you can it'll stand out. And that'll be a theme throughout the classes that we go through. The Greek words will come to us in that blue, so you can see them quite readily where they appear. And so Acts 2 and 44, and all who believed were together and had all things in common. And that word common is that word you see there, kina. And that's the same root word where we get kini from. And I want you to move on a little bit further to Acts 10 and verse 14. I'm sure these are familiar passages to us. That first Acts 2 passage was about the early Christian church, how they had all things in common. And now we move on to the vision that Peter had about the clean and unclean animals. And we have here in verse 14, "But Peter said, 'No, Lord, for I have never eaten anything that is common or unclean.'" And so there's that word common again, kinon. And so just to give you an idea of how it was used, it means common. Now, scholars used to think that this language, kini, was a debased form of Greek, used especially by the Hebrews, and confined more or less to translations of the Old Testament, that is, the Septuagint, because the Septuagint comes to us in the same language, in the kini language, and to the New Testament writings. However, discovery of papyrus and inscriptions during this past century has shown that the kini language was used, in fact, commonly. It wasn't just for writings. Kini was more practical than academic, putting stress on clarity rather than eloquence. Its grammar was simplified, exceptions were decreased and generalized, inflections dropped or harmonized, and sentence construction made easier compared to classical Greek. In a nutshell, kini was the language of life and not of books. Now, there is a variation in the style of the kini Greek written by the different New Testament writers. The book of Hebrews displays perhaps the greatest diversity and the degree of literary skill, followed by the writings of Luke. Revelation is the least literary and is noticeably Semiticized, which is probably due to the likely fact that the revelation was given to John in Hebrew, which then he had to translate into Greek. There are many examples of Semiticisms in the New Testament, which is explained by the fact that the first century Christians used the Septuagint. The Septuagint being the Old Testament translated into Greek, into Kini Greek. And obviously that would have been heavily influenced by Hebrew, and perhaps because many of the New Testament writers had a working knowledge of Hebrew as well. It is interesting that although all the canonical books that make up our scripture are inspired, God allowed each writer's personal styles to shine through and to have emphasis through their work. This is well in accord with the well-established principle that God works through people. It is thought-provoking to note that our New Testament was not written in the earlier, stilted and wordy classical Greek, the origins of the language, but it was written in Kini Greek, something that could be easily understood by everyone in a language that was lucid and clear. As an aside, and well beyond the scope of our classes, many people believe that this is the principal language that the Lord Jesus Christ would have spoken. The fourth period was Byzantine Greek, and as I said, it was the official language of the Byzantine Empire, Byzantio pronounced in Greek. And the Byzantine Empire was, again, centered in Constantinople. It was a split off the Roman Empire church in early AD. And it was the center of the Greek Orthodox Church. But this represented the early version of the modern Greek language. Since it was spoken across vast lands by many people, it continued to incorporate local dialects and idioms. Thus, the intellectuals of those days thought that this language was not pure and sought to return to the classic Greek written in Athens. And so we come to the last period. Thanks for hanging in for me. The last period is the modern Greek. So in the late 18th century, a feeling of national identity arose in Greece, among the Greeks. Actually, it wasn't Greece. It was occupied by the Turks for 400 years. They were oppressed for 400 years. And in 1821, they were to break free from 400 years of Turkish rule. And so language became a political issue as people debated which form of Greek would be the most appropriate for them to use to start up an independent state that they were contemplating to founding. In the opinion of some people, the classical roots of Attic Greek best represented the Greek nation. But for others, the use of Kini in Constantinople gave them a form of more recent claim to acceptance. And yet there was a third group who favored a modified form of the Greek spoken at the time, which was called Demotic Greek. Now that word Demotic comes from the Greek word demos, which means public. So it was the public language at the time. And they reason because they equated that language with nationhood, which was the practice of the majority of the Greeks at the time. Now, there was a gentleman called Adamandios Koreas. He was a nationalist, and he suggested a compromise between the Attic language, which is the old classic language, and the current language. And so he came up with this new language, or new form of Greek, and it was called Katharevousa. Now, that word we're going to get to soon. Katharos means clean, and we'll see in a minute. So he felt that would be the clean Greek, and it was accepted as the official language. Now, Katharevousa was an attempt to recover elements of classic Greek, and it remained the official language till 1976, so very recently, about 30 years ago. But even at that time, the Demotic Greek, the simpler Greek, was used in primary school. Katharevousa was being used in university, so it was interesting. There was almost a dichotomy there. However, in 1976, a law replaced Katharevousa with modern or standard Demotic Greek. And there you go, we've made it. Standard Demotic Greek, this is the language that I speak, or the form of the language that I know and speak. And this is the form of the language that is spoken by everybody in Greece, on the Greek mainland, on the islands, and in Cyprus. Now, it wasn't my intent to bore you with this long history of the language, but I feel that by giving you this history, it gives you a complete picture of the language and what it went through, and so we can appreciate all that it went through. Now, furthermore, it's interesting that just as in Jesus' time, where the traditional classical literary language gave way to the simpler form, the Kini form, kind of the same thing happened again as the Greeks were trying to decide whether they kept Katharevousa or not. And they chose the Demotic, which is a simpler form, a language for the common people. We'll move on to study language and the makeup of language. Now, any language can be split up into three basic parts. The first part being the phonological system of the language. And this is the sound, the way it sounds. The pronunciation. And we're going to get to more on this later. This will be a big focus of our class. The second system is the grammatical, the system of forms and arrangements of those forms. Now, I want to make a point here that it is in this zone that the languages differ the most. And it makes it especially difficult for me to fully understand the language written in the Greek New Testament. I can read it, and I can stand I can understand most of it, but because of the nature of the grammar, it makes it difficult for me because this has changed the most. And the grammar is well beyond our scope to look at. It's far too complicated. And the third is the semantic, which is the meanings of the forms or the vocabulary. So these are the words and the meaning of the words. And the words have, for the most part, remained the same. So the words that are used in the New Testament writings are very common to what's used today. Some of them have dropped off. There's new ones that have come through. And of course, some of them have, the meanings have evolved, as we'll see as well. But for the most part, this has stayed the same, which really helps me out. Now, just one note on the grammar, as I've mentioned, just to indicate the complexity of the grammar. Our English language is an analytical language. Now, this means that words make sense depending on the order they are presented in a sentence. Okay? Now, for Kini Greek, Kini Greek is a synthetic language. And that means that the construction of a word is more important than the order of the words in a sentence. Changes in a word's ending or construction provide all the information that's needed to understand what that sentence says and is more important than the order. And I'll give you an example. You don't have to turn here, but this is an example. This is taken from 2 Corinthians 9 and 7. God loves, and it's just the phrase, God loves a cheerful giver. Now, in the Greek, it's rendered, ilaron dotin agapa o theos. Now, there's five Greek words here. Now, you can scramble that as much as you want and make as many as 25 arrangements of those words, and they will still mean the same thing in the Greek. And that's why it's much more complicated, I believe, than even the English language. The way they do that makes it difficult to understand sometimes exactly what it means. You have to study the grammar and all the endings to get it spot on. We'll move on then to pronunciation. The written form of Greek has remained very much the same from Plato to Paul, which is very good for me. Kini has 24 letters, and so does the Greek alphabet of today. And they're the same 24 letters. I'll quote one scholar. He writes, quote, "It is possible to discover by various methods and with considerable precision what the pronunciation of Greek was like in both Plato and Paul's time. However, for our purposes, it would not be very useful to do so. Some system of pronunciation must be adopted, but this system need not have any relation to the actual pronunciation of Greek by its native speakers at any period." This is a quote from a scholar. Now, I personally feel that that's a sad statement to make. In effect, what he's saying is, it's not relevant how Greek sounded or how it sounds like now. He's saying, for scholarly purposes, we will create our own pronunciation to suit our own purposes. And I think this is a horrible stance from the scholars. They're putting their agenda first and kind of making a mockery of the language while doing that. What the scholars try to do is give each Greek letter, or each Greek symbol, as they would, a unique sound, which admittedly would make it easier to pronounce and study and to learn. However, this is not the case in the Greek. That's not the way it is. I know that this makes it harder to learn, and trust me, when I was learning it in Greek school, it was not easy to learn, and we didn't really want to go because it was tough. But this is how it is. If you want to know how it's pronounced, this is the way it is. And again, you saw just from one word, and I'll give you some more, koine versus kini, what a difference it is. And I think if we started to do that to the English language and pronounce it in a hodgepodge way, it would be a turnoff. So, in my opinion, if something is difficult to learn, we shouldn't be tampering with it to make it easier. We should try to give it respect and learn it the way it's supposed to be learned. So, I'll disregard this scholar and move on to something I found a little bit more interesting and perhaps a more reasonable approach on the internet. And this comes from a gentleman that has put up a mini course on Kinia Greek, and it's available free of charge on the internet. Now, I'm not going to promote it by any means, but if anyone is interested in that site, I have it here. You're welcome to take it from me afterwards. Anyway, he gives a concise breakdown on the three main ways that the Greek language can be pronounced. And here's how he presents it. The first one is the Erasmian pronunciation. This is that pronunciation used by scholars, the system that they created. Now, this is what I want you to take a big lesson. That one of these scholars included Strong, okay? And so, in our concordance, in Strong, the concordance that most of us probably use is Strong's, he uses this pronunciation, okay? So, he's to blame. No, I'm just kidding. This is where the koine comes from, is from this pronunciation. So take note. It's probably based upon the pronunciation used by a Renaissance scholar named Erasmus, who was the main force behind the first printed copies of the New Testament Greek. Now, also, I want you to listen to that. The Erasmian pronunciation is probably different from the way Greek was pronounced at the time of the New Testament, but it is widespread among scholars, and it has the advantage that every letter is pronounced, which makes it easy to grasp the spelling of words. And this is correct, that it is easier to use this pronunciation. However, this pronunciation was not what it sounded like when Christ were to speak it, and it's nowhere near what it sounds like and how we speak it now. The second proposed way we can pronounce it is the modern Greek way. And this is the way it's pronounced today. And this is the way I pronounce it. And if anyone talks Greek to any Greek across the entire globe, this is the way they speak. Some people prefer to teach this pronunciation for the New Testament Greek, myself included. Modern Greek pronunciation is probably more similar to the New Testament Greek pronunciation than the Erasmian, but is not identical. Okay? And the last one is called Reconstructed New Testament Greek. There are some scholarly books which attempt to reconstruct the original pronunciation of New Testament Greek, and they have reached the point that there seems to be fairly widespread agreement on the original pronunciation. As far as I, that is the author, know, nobody ever teaches this pronunciation. Incidentally, since there was a large variety of Greek dialects, there was no single way to pronounce Greek, even in the New Testament era. So to put all this in a nutshell, it would appear that the Erasmian pronunciation is the most widespread among scholars because it suits their needs, as previously mentioned, even though it is furthest from being accurate. The modern Greek pronunciation is closer to the original pronunciation and exists today and is spoken by millions of people. It makes sense to me, then, to maintain this method of pronunciation, not the one made up by the scholars. When I hear the Erasmian pronunciation, many a time it does make me cringe, because a lot of times it doesn't even sound like the language. And so when someone's up on the platform, and they're speaking and trying to pronounce the Greek words, and I credit them for doing that, If we have visiting speakers or interested friends who do know the language, and this can occur, and the attempted Greek pronunciation comes up, it won't look so good on us. The credibility will be questioned. Whereas if we can learn to pronounce it the way it's pronounced now, and our speaker were to pronounce that word kini and not koine, I think that would create a lasting impression on any hearer who knows of the Greek language. As an aside, there was a Greek brother who visited us a few weeks ago in Toronto, and there were some Greek words that came up, and he pronounced them perfectly. And it's just such a nice thing to hear them zing right off his tongue. So if we all learn the modern pronunciation, and it's not hard, if we all learn that and you attempt the word, you'll come across that as like you're speaking, as if you're speaking the genuine article. And I think this makes a lot of sense. And just, I'll give you a few more examples. I know we mention ourselves as an ecclesia, correct? That's another Greek word. And the pronunciation is actually ekklesia. Okay, there you see the difference. Another very common Greek word is the one for love. I'm sure we all know agape, as it's pronounced in the anglicized way, but the Greek way is agape. You can see the difference in the way they're pronounced. And the one, perhaps, that's for me one of the furthest from being close is the word for soul. I believe the way the Erasmian pronunciation has it is psuki. And the real word, the real way to pronounce it is psihi. You can see the difference in the way they come across. So if you talk about psuki, I would, and no Greek would have an idea of what you're saying, right? It's so far from being close. But if you talk about psihi, then it's Greek. It, right away, they'll know what that means. And that PS is where we get psychology. That PS, it should be pronounced in the Greek. It's psihi. There's no silence. Okay, so we're going to move on to this handout, which is right here. Okay, hopefully you all have one of these. Now, I'll just quickly go over it, and then we're going to get into it. Some of you out there may have this, that the bottom got cut off. I apologize for that. You can correct it with what's up here, or you can correct it I think half of you have the one that's got it all and half don't. My apologies for that, but you can correct it properly and fill that out. This is a handout of the 24 letters of the Greek alphabet. Where you see a V, it means that letter is a vowel, and there are 7 in the Greek alphabet. And I want you to pull this out now, because I'm going to go through every letter and how it's pronounced one by one, and you can follow along, because it's almost the same as what you've got in your handout. And also what I want you to do is, after the class, if you don't mind, you can put this in your Strong's. And that way, when you want to see how the word's supposed to be pronounced, you can use this, and then your pronunciation will be perfect. Okay? So we'll move on, and we'll begin by looking at the letters. So this is the first letter of the Greek alphabet and the English alphabet. It's alpha. It's a vowel, and it's and the pronunciation is the same as the A in father. The next letter is vita. Okay, note that it's vita, and it's pronounced with a V as in victory. It's not a B. I know many of us probably know it as beta. It's truly not beta, it's vita. Okay, and it's pronounced as a V. It's the equivalent of our V. Okay, the next one is probably the trickiest, because there is no direct equivalent in the English language. The closest you come is between a Y sound and a soft G sound. So that's the word. That's the same letter that comes up in that word love, agape. So it's not a gappy and it's not a yappy, but it's agape. It's in between. Okay, that's the trickiest one, because there's no direct equivalent. So just think of agape. That's that gamma sound. That word's this letter's called gamma, and we pronounce it gamma because there's no exact G equivalent in the English. The next letter is delta, and I'm sure you will have picked it up that I've got the capital and the small letter as well. On your handout, the small size being first, and then the capital being below it. Velta. This is the same sound as in the th as in the velta. It's not a D sound. It's velta. Moving on, this is another vowel, epsilon, and it has the same sound as that E in bet. The next letter is zeta. This is the same letter as our Z, and it is pronounced the exact same way. It's a Z. Z as in zoo. Or Z. Z as in zoo. The next letter is eta. Eta. It's pronounced E. I should have used a better word than police. My apologies. But that E sound, the double E sound, as in police, that's the sound you want. E. Just the E, the long E sound. And that's a vowel as well. Ita. It's not an H. Ita. Next letter is theta. Here's another TH sound, but this is the TH sound as in thin. The nice thing about the Greek language, it doesn't change pronunciation. This is it. It doesn't change. So what you see here, although in English we'll have two THs, and sometimes it's the and sometimes it's thin, it doesn't work that way in Greek. Whenever you see a letter, this is how it's always pronounced. It's a nice thing about Greek. It's clean that way. This is the TH sound as in thin. This is iota, not iota, but iota. That's how it's pronounced. So Y-O-T-A, iota. And it too is pronounced E as in police. That's the second time we've come across that pronunciation. This is correct. We're actually going to come across five ways Greeks say E. Okay? It's the way it works. I didn't make it up, but it is true. This is not a lie. There's five ways they do that E sound. So it's a very common sound in Greek. And you saw even in kini, there's two E sounds, but they're two totally different letters. Next is kappa, which is the same as our K. We go on to lambda, which is the same as our L, as in lemon. Next one is the M. Mi, it's pronounced mi. I know in some mathematics they use this character and they pronounce it mu. It's incorrectly pronounced. Well, it's the Erasmian. The correct way is mi. And it's the M as in mother. And speaking of which, we're going to get to a couple more of those. This is the N, the Greek N. Note the lowercase looks like RV. It's not RV, unfortunately. It's going to be difficult, but it's not RV. It's RV, but it's not pronounced V. It's pronounced N. That's the Greek N, as in no. This is an interesting letter. It's the Xi, and it's the equivalent of our X. It's always difficult to get that lowercase letter right in Greek school because it's got so many squiggles. Next one is Omicron. Now, I want to ask you if you could please change. I have in the handout that it's the same as O as in loss. But you know what? That's not as accurate as it should be. It's the O as in no. So it's the long O sound. So if you can change that, that's more accurate. N as in, it's the O as in no. And that's Omicron, and that too is a vowel. Now here's another well-known one in the mathematics and science field, the letter P, and we call it pi. Again, that's the Erasmian pronunciation. The real pronunciation is P, just like our letter P. This one is Rho. This is the equivalent of our R. Just to confuse you a little bit more, it looks like RP, but it's not RP. It's R, okay? So it's pronounced, it's the same as our R. R is in run. Next one is sigma, which is the S in Greek. Now, this has a bit of an exception where there's two lowercase S's, one that looks familiar to RS. Now, just to let you know, if the letter S occurs inside of a word, they use the standard lowercase s. If there's an s at the end of a word, we always use what looks like rs. So it's called teliko sigma. Teliko means ending, telos. So if you have a Greek word that ends with an s, you always use the s that looks like r's. Next letter is taf, and that's the same as rt, which makes it nice and easy. This letter looks like a Y. It's Ypsilon. This is the third time now we've come across an E sound. Okay? Ypsilon. And it too is a vowel. This letter is Phi, and that's pronounced like an F, the equivalent of RF as in foot. The next letter is He. Although it looks like RX, it's not pronounced X. It's pronounced like RH. We're almost there. This is Psi. So this is Psihi. Remember? Psihi, this is the letter. It looks like that pitchfork. And it's the PS as in lips. So it's the equivalent of our two letters in one. Ps. Okay? Psihi. And we come to the end, the omega. The omega is pronounced the exact same as the omicron. There's two O's in Greek, and they're pronounced the exact same. So you can change that in your handout too, if you will, and just put pronounced as like the O in no. And if you notice, we started with the Alpha and we ended with the Omega. This is the significance when Christ mentions He is the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end of the Greek alphabet. Now we'll move on to the diphthongs. These are, the phthongi are the vowels, so diphthongi, two vowels. So there's two vowels together to make one sound. And they're in your handout just on the lower left. So here's E number four. If you have these two letters together, epsilon iota, again, it's the E sound. You don't pronounce them separately. You pronounce them as one sound. And here's the fifth one. When you have omicron iota together, it's pronounced E as well. So kini had, the first E in kini was omicron iota, and the last E in kini was the epsilon, which is the one above it. Sorry, the one, actually, the first one that I have there equals to epsilon. Alpha iota is the equivalent of E, of the epsilon in Greek. So there's two ways to do epsilon, or the sound of epsilon. Now these are a little bit tricky. My name in Greek is Stavros, and I have this combination in my name. The AV sound, Stavros, is that AV sound I've got there. This is where you have to be familiar with the language, familiar with the words, so you know whether it's AF or AV. But no one will fault you if you pronounce it one way or the other. That's a great attempt. And this one is simple. OU is pronounced U, as in our roof. And here's another. The epsilon, epsilon, is F or EV as well. So the Greek way to say thank you is ευχαριστώ. And that's where the word Eucharist comes from, EU. Anyway, ευχαριστώ. So this is the EF sound. That word begins with epsilon, epsilon. And this is very rare, but this comes up occasionally. And if you see this, these are the two E's together. They're just a long E sound. We'll get on to the digraphs. These are two consonants together, giving a unique sound. This is where the Greeks get some of the sounds that we have. So, for instance, if you see these two letters together, gamma kappa or gamma gamma, it's the NG or G sound. Now, it's been simplified. The NG sound has been dropped. You can go either way. For instance, the word angel in Greek is agelos, and it's got the gamma gamma in it, agelos. You can say angelos too, where we get the NG in English. That's where it comes from, the way we pronounce it in Greek. Either way is fine. Angelos or agelos, it's okay. But this is where the Greeks get their G from. There's no separate letter for G, the hard G. This is the mipi is the B or the MB sound. The Greek word for father is, or for dad is baba. So there's the B. It could be bamba too, but that's been dropped. It's now baba, just to make it easier. This is where they get their D sound. So nitaf. Again, if you guys have this in your Strongs, you don't have to memorize all these. You can just find them. Okay, nitaf is our D sound. So there is a D equivalent in Greek. It's just two letters to make one sound. The taf zita is the DZ sound. I don't know if you know of a Greek dip called tzatziki. This is the way you pronounce it with that taf z, tzatziki. Okay, we move on to punctuation. Now, many of you will likely know that in the New Testament manuscripts, there's very few punctuation marks of any kind. They are in our scripts because the editors have put them in for our help. But obviously punctuation does exist. The period is the same as ours. A raised dot is the equivalent of our semicolon. I think I have these. Yeah, I have them for you as well on the right side of your handout. The comma is the same as ours. And what looks like our semicolon is the equivalent of the Greek question mark. Okay, that's one tricky one. It is not our, it's not the equivalent of our semicolon, it's the question mark. We then get to these prepositions. Now, I'm not going to spend too much time here. I told my wife this is self-explanatory, but she said, no, it's not. So I've got to tell you a little bit about it, okay? So, prepositions. If you picture that circle is the focus, is the, let's say it's the person of the diagram. So, if you are here, you are under the diagram, okay? That's the word ipo, as in hypodermic needle. It goes under the skin, okay? On the top there, you'll see iped, which is where we get super from. It's above, hyper, right? It's above. So iped means you are above. So if these prepositions come before words and give them different meanings. We're going to look at that word pros right here. We're going to look at that in one of our classes, our next class coming. So that means towards, because that word is coming towards the person. Okay? So that's how you explain that diagram. Okay? And I think there's a few more prepositions. Yes, you'll find a few more prepositions in the other handout, and I'll get to that in a minute, that were left out of the diagram. We're almost there. The accents. There used to be all kinds of accents when I was learning the language in the 70s. Very difficult to position and put. Thank goodness they have since changed that. There's only one accent. It's called the tonos, or the tone. So it's where you put the emphasis of a word. So, for instance, it's kini, not kini. Okay, same as our language where we emphasize the certain syllable. So just to give you a quick recap, you're going to find these punctuation marks in accents in the New Testament script. You can, for the most part, ignore it. You just got to worry about where the emphasis goes. So those two little dashes, the opening quotation, single quotation, and closing single quotation were called the breathers. Okay, and they actually may have had some form of pronunciation. They don't anymore. They were called in Greek, if you want, just for trivia, psili and vasia. These always gave us heartache. They begin in the beginning of a word, sometimes over vowels, above vowels, next to vowels. It was tricky. We don't have to worry about those because they're not relevant anymore. This is another one we don't have to worry about either. It looks like the accent grave, I think, in French. I think that's what it's called. It goes above a letter. It was called perispomeni in Greek. It has been done away with and it replaced by the single tonos, which is right there. This is the accent we use now. I know on my slides they're on a downward slope. They're oriented on a slope. You can do that, or you can just put it straight up and down. It doesn't matter. But that tells us where to put the emphasis on the syllable. Great. So this wraps up the formal part. I'm just going to guide you to the handout. If you can get to your second handout. I have a quick fact there for you that there are no more than 5,400 Greek words in the New Testament Greek. Now, that might sound like a lot of words, but I believe the Hebrew has over twice as many. So it's an easy language, okay? Now, I've got here the prepositions for you again, and a few more. There's some not in the diagram. Remember I mentioned that in Greek there's masculine, feminine, and neutral. I've got the definite articles there. I've got the numbers for you. One, it's self-explanatory. And to get you guys going, I thought I would give you some homework. If you want, you don't have to. If you want, you are welcome to attempt to spell out your name here the way it would sound in Greek. Okay? I remember when I did this, I did a similar introductory talk quite a few years ago at Old Scarlet Road, and the first volunteer was Brother Rod Gent. He was so excited, and he even put his first and last name. He was that excited. But no, it's okay. I don't mind. If you want to, you're welcome anytime to show it to me, and I'll tell you how well you did. And then on the back, there are 68 words, keywords in the New Testament Greek. I'm sure many of you are familiar with some of these. If you like, you're welcome to try it. What I'd like you to do is to put them in alphabetical order and match up their meanings. Okay, so two things you've got to do. I have the answer sheet. You're welcome to ask for it anytime, but you got to give it an honest attempt, okay? And just so you know, when I presented the letters and on your handout, the letter handout, this is the alphabetical order of the actual Greek language, from A to Z, if you will, from Alpha to Omega. Okay? Thank you very much.